Today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online is an encore presentation. We hope you enjoy the show. Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, asking you for your support of this show. If you enjoy the ghost stories we tell, the stories that we share, the experiences that we bring to you, we ask for your support by becoming an EPP, an extra podcast person. For becoming an EPP, you'll get even more of just that. All those experiences, all those stories, and quite frankly, some of the best ones that we get in are going right to our EPP members. So if you want to hear those stories, you want to keep this thing going, sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click become an EPP. Get all the bonus podcast episodes, exclusive video content, and more. That is what keeps this show alive. Without it, we could not go on. Check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is, and on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we have a treat for you. We are talking with one of the UK's foremost psychical researchers, who's all about evidence. Tricia Robertson is joining us today on Real Ghost Stories Online to talk about everything from ghosts, paranormal, astral projections, psychics, you name it. We're probably going to be covering it as we talk with Tricia Robertson today here on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tricia, thank you so much for joining us. I want to ask you first off, how did you enter this world that we call the paranormal?
And it all began about 1982 with an intellectual curiosity, really, more than anything else. I could never actually buy into any particular religion. And of course, psychical research has got nothing whatever to do with any religion at all. It's to do with evidence. What is the evidence for, you know, particular things?
Sure.
So out of a curiosity, I started to investigate these things, and then I became friendly with the Professor Archie Roy from Glasgow University. Mm-hmm. And he and I did a lot of work, research. We wrote papers together, went on investigations together, and worked extremely well as a team, producing three peer-reviewed papers in peer-reviewed journals on mediumship.
Okay. When you began doing this, did you set out with the mindset of, I'm open to finding evidence of this? Or did you think you were going to almost debunk something? What was your mindset at the beginning?
No, I never actually set out to debunk.
Okay.
But I didn't believe in anything.
Okay.
And that's the important part. I did go out with an open mindset. Mm-hmm. As did, now, Professor Roy was a generation older than I am. And he himself, as a 19-year-old at Glasgow University, looked at Glasgow University Library of Books and thought, what are all these books about psychical research doing in a university library? And he was very dismissive of them. But as he said, to his credit, he began to read some of them, and he realized the amount of evidence that's there from well-established scientists was immense. And as he said, to his credit, he began to look seriously at the question and research himself. And that's exactly what I did. I just took on the research, went about it with a completely open and unbiased mind. And that's how I began.
What was your first moment you had where you got a piece of evidence in your psychical research that made you go, this is interesting?
Well, there was a lot of earlier stages where I would go, this is interesting. Now, as you know yourself, if you want to make hare soup, first of all, you've got to catch a hare. So I did a sort of preliminary investigation. I couldn't call it research as such, but I did a preliminary investigation going around some of the best spiritualist churches to listen to mediums speaking, because some mediums, as you know, speak a lot of nonsense, and some mediums are extremely good. And this is yet another problem. We're not dealing with a level playing field all of the time.
Sure.
But I heard enough within what I was listening to and evaluating, and sometimes I would go and stop people after the meetings and ask them about their reading, and I would do a very small evaluation on that, of course, which is not entirely scientific, in fact, not scientific at all, but it led me to believe that it was all worth further investigation, and that's how I really started to look at it seriously.
Okay. And then you began to continue on with your investigations. How did your career progress after that?
Well, Professor Roy and I, after all the work, we gave lectures at Glasgow University in the evening classes for mature students. Mm-hmm. We provided 40 hours of lectures, not all at the same time. We provided 40 hours of lectures to people who wanted to come and hear all about the things that we had found. Mm-hmm. Now, the paranormal is a vast gamut of topics, as you know, and no one person can know everything about everything. Mm-hmm. And my baby, if you want to call it, my soapbox is survival. What evidence do we have that shows almost without any doubt whatsoever that at least some personalities survive physical death? Do they come back? What happens? What can they do? Etc., etc., etc. And in that pursuit, there have been some wow moments in that.
Sure. Now, how often, because I'm sure you're contacted quite frequently from folks who are trying to either reach out to a deceased loved one or someone they cared about, or seeking out some sort of evidence, some sort of validity to the thought that their loved one is somewhere else. Essentially, and they may say that they have this experience or that experience, or here, come in and see what we have going on. How often do you run into cases where that evidence is legitimate or doesn't really hold up and is simply explainable by means that are other than paranormal?
Well, of course, there's a lot of wishful thinking in a lot of cases, but that's not the type of thing that Archie and I deal with. We tend to set up experiments on our own, or go out to different people. And one of my absolutely wow moments was one where a woman came to me. It was about 1996. A woman that I did not know came to me, and she told me that her daughter had been murdered and the police could not find anyone for this murder. So I knew deep within myself that she really wanted me to set up a reading with a medium, because I know all the good mediums, as you can understand.
Sure.
But I felt it was only 3 months since her daughter had been murdered. I felt it was too raw. I felt it was far too soon for her to go to a medium, because some of these things, especially when she was murdered, I thought it might be far too emotional for her to do that. So what I did was, on the spur of the moment, I said to her, well, look, we can meet again if you bring me an envelope, an A5 envelope with something in it that belonged to your daughter. I will take it to various mediums and see if they can get anything from the envelope, if they could tell us anything about your daughter's, you know, afterlife survival, or indeed murder. So we arranged to meet again in a third place sort of thing, not with where either of us lived. And she gave me this envelope, which only felt bumpy to me. You couldn't say it was a watch or a ring, whatever. It just felt very, very bumpy. And of course, the envelope was sealed. So I then took this envelope to a couple of mediums that I knew, and they made some prognostications about it, but nothing that sounded terribly great to me altogether. So I then called in on a medium that I knew fairly well. And it's the kind of person I was able to go to his house. So I went to his house unannounced and went into the house where the medium was sitting, playing on a computer and smoking a cigarette with the other hand. And I said to him, I threw the envelope down and I said, can you get anything from this? And he looked at me and he said, do I have to? And I said, yes, please. So knowing that I don't ask, you know, airy-fairily, he put his hand grudgingly on the envelope, and immediately his eyes popped open and he looked at me and he said, I've got a girl here that was murdered.
Oh, jeez.
Now, you have to realise that I knew nothing about this murder. This was now 3-4 months after the murder, mm-hmm. and I did not know the details of the murder at all. So I just nodded, and of course I'm taking notes as the person is speaking. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is a girl with a shoulder length dark hair, and she's telling me that she was murdered. She tells me that she misses her 3 cats. She's also telling me that she's got 2 tattoos on her body, and he described the tattoos, where they were, what the colours were. And then he said, she's telling me she lived in a cul-de-sac, if you know what a cul-de-sac is.
Yep.
And you live, she lives one up on the right in a particular address. She's telling me that her boyfriend, and he named the name, was the first one to know that she was dead. And he was the one that called my mum. That's what was said by the medium. So I don't know, of course, if this is right or not. I have no idea. So I'm just writing it down. So I couldn't possibly give the medium any verification whatsoever. She then said, my mum has moved my photograph from the top of the mantelpiece to the television, top of the television today. I just wrote it down. And the medium went on to give 29 pieces of information about this girl, from the girl. And the conversation was like a 3-way conversation. He would say to me, she's telling me this, she's telling me that. So it was like a 3-way conversation to me, and I could not verify if any of it was correct. He also gave an address, and he gave, oh, that's the other thing he said. He said, she's telling me that when she was in Cornton Vale Women's Prison when she was young. And I kind of thought, wow, well, that's either true or it's not true. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone that's ever been in Cornton Vale Prison, and it's really a guess. So it was that type of validity of the information that he gave to me, that every single piece of information could be checked. Mm-hmm. Now, she also described her murder. She described it was 2 men that murdered her. She gave an address, etc., etc. So altogether, when the medium gave me 29 pieces of information, for which I could tell him nothing if it was right or wrong.
Sure.
Fine. So I then went home and tabulated all of this information and made an arrangement to meet the mother in her own home a day or two later. I can't remember, a day or a day after. So I then went to the mother's home with the information, and I said to her, I have information given to me by a medium which may all be absolutely wrong. Now, one of the things that the medium had said was, the girl, the newspaper reports of the clothes she was wearing were all wrong. And the medium, or the girl, gave the correct information in the 29 pieces of information. So I started out reading item number 1, you know, she lived in a cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
Yes, that was true. And I said to her, well, as soon as I walked in, I saw a photograph of a girl on top of the television. And I said to her, ah, is that your daughter? And she said, yes, I just moved her photograph there 2 days ago, which was the day that I was speaking to the medium.
Yeah.
So this is after death information that the personality seemed to know what happened in her mother's life after she had died. Anyway, when you do all of that, I only told the mother 22 pieces of information because some of it was quite harrowing. Mm-hmm. And she also said she had a pregnancy terminated when she was younger. I didn't tell the mother that. She might not have known. This girl was 26 years of age when she died.
Mm-hmm.
So of all the pieces of information I gave the mother, 22 pieces were absolutely correct.
Wow.
The other 7 pieces I didn't tell her because I chickened out. I didn't want to cause the woman any more stress.
Sure.
Knowing how she was murdered, or knowing she had lost, or she had a termination of a baby. But she did confirm that she had been in Cornton Vale Prison when she was 15 years of age. Now, that information was all correct, given to me through a medium who didn't know the murdered person I didn't know the murdered person. So where did that information come from?
That's
to me, there's only one answer.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a lot of these super skeptics. I mean, you have them in America. We have them here, too. I have another word for some of them, but I can't say it on radio. And,
you can say anything on our show. Trust me.
Okay. Well, assholes would be a good word.
Yes, I think that'd be appropriate.
Yeah. We do not look at the evidence. Now, as you may know, all of the stuff that Archie and I did, stuff I've done on my own, research work we've done, all these kind of things, I thought, this cannot go to waste. So, as you know, I've written all of these things down in the two books that I've produced. Yeah. There is not one single exaggeration in them. There is no lie in them. They're absolutely straightforward. And as I asked the question in the books, where else could this information have come from? Now, skeptics band about this super psi and they band about telepathy. There is absolutely no experiment in the world that shows telepathy works to that degree. Mm-hmm. And telepathy between whom? Because I didn't know. The medium didn't know any of the information. Mm-hmm. And as the medium said to me, well, if it is telepathy, it's telepathy between me and the person that's deceased.
When it comes to
remembering that most of the information she gave, and I will say she gave, was post-mortem.
Yeah.
The girl was dead by the time these things had happened. He phoned my mum. He was the first to know I died. He phoned my mum, and that was all absolutely correct.
When it comes
that's a wow moment for me. Wow.
Sure. When it comes to mediums and just having the ability to do that, to essentially be the voice for someone who has passed on, based on your experience and your findings, do you believe that that is something that is essentially a genetic thing, something that you're born with, that is just a skill that is there, that one possesses and others do not possess? Is it something that can be learned as a skill, or how do people come about it? What do you believe on that?
Well, I don't like the word belief for a start, Tony.
Sure.
I never believe. I go on the evidence.
Okay.
Now, there's a wonderful Scottish-Irish medium called Albert Best. He was a fantastic medium. And Albert Best always said that the best mediums are born mediumistic.
Sure.
Now, all of the things you said are true. You and I could go to an art school or an art class, and we can all draw to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But some people are better than others.
Yeah.
You could learn to be much, much better than I am. You might have that innate skill that has then been developed. So everything you've said is true. And I still believe the best mediums are born mediumistic. It's not something they have to learn.
Sure.
But some people seem to have a gift which can be developed if they sit properly in a proper circle with a proper teacher, allowing them to develop that skill. But equally, and some people will never be any good, most of the people that are in it for money have not been born with that skill. It's something they want to do to make money, and they're never going to be great. And you quite often find the ones that are not the best charge the most money.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, in all my research, Archie and I did a 5-year study of mediums. We conducted experiments up to triple blind, you know, where the medium can't see the recipients don't know they're the recipients, and so on. There's 3 published papers on it. It's quite mathematical. Mm-hmm. But we proved with the mediums that we used and the audiences we didn't know, mm-hmm. beyond a shadow of doubt, that the medium statements were relevant only to the intended sitters. But that's not to say that all mediums are good, because they're not.
Sure.
And this is a problem, a huge problem. And with mediumship comes great responsibility. I've often had to sort of had someone come to me in a terrible state because a so-called medium/psychic had told them something not nice. Now, a proper medium will never do that. And this is the problem, that we're not dealing with a level playing field. But I presume you know the quotation by William James that to get rid of the statement that all crows are black. You only need to find one white crow to prove that one a different thing exists. Mm-hmm. And it's like that with the paranormal. There's a lot of rubbish spoken about it, a lot of nonsense on television, radio, etc., on films, because they want to sensationalize it. Mm-hmm. But there are elements of truth. There's nuggets of gold there if you look for them and find them. And I have found some fantastic mediums who are totally ethical and will not particularly charge for a particular reading if there's a tremendous bereavement. And in all the work we've done, Archie and I, not one medium or not one psychical researcher has ever been paid one penny. And that's the way I like it. Yeah. That's the way I like it.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, in your book, in your books, Things You Can Do When You're Dead and More Things You Can Do When You're Dead.
Yeah.
Tell me about, is the book written from the perspective of the dead as kind of a roadmap or a guide to their new afterlife, or from the perspective of the living and how to recognize them?
It's from the perspective of me.
Okay.
And the things that I've discovered. And also a little bit of history, and not boring history into psychical research.
Sure.
The Society for Psychical Research was founded in 1882 in London by a lot of scientists, philosophers, people that really knew something, that knew there was something other than this life on Earth here. And they looked at it very pragmatically. Psychical research is the study of the phenomena associated with spiritualism and all phenomena like hauntings, etc. Well, and they put their their shoulder to the wheel, and they did some fantastic work, and that work is still going on. And I point out from the perspective of the book that, look, we're not all mad. This is some of the evidence. These are the kind of people who looked at it. These are my own experiences. These are some of my spontaneous cases, things that happen to real people in real life. Mm-hmm. And then I put the argument. I feel that in both books, I have made a case, as in a court of law, that survival is a fact beyond reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way we can look at it. There's two types of proof in this world, and one is mathematical and scientific, where you can prove 2 and 2 always equal 4. That's never going to change. And then we come to court of law in your country and mine, where people sit in a jury and they have to weigh up the evidence for and against. And in my mind, after 30 years experience, if you weigh up the good evidence, there's no doubt in my mind that certainly some people have come back to show us that they have survived. Mm-hmm. I then look at, if we do survive, what might it be like? And then I go into all sort of different things about what it might be like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's got nothing, whatever. It shouldn't offend any religion at all, because if your religion believes in an afterlife, then I've got the evidence there to say, yeah, that looks as if it works. Yeah, that works for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, obviously, there are so many, for lack of a better term, cases of hauntings and paranormal activity, and so many different levels and ways that they happen and ways that they're described and experienced. What would you say, based on your research, what are some of the most common ways that people are, in fact, visited by the dead?
Well, the most common one is when people pass, first of all, they want to come back and let you know that they're okay. Now, for myself, my own personal experiences, which are not at all scientific, so when somebody dies, like my friend, a mother, Professor Roy, etc., they usually get to me through electronic equipment. Mm-hmm. It's always something to do with electrics, because I am not mediumistic, and that's the way I like it, because I can't be accused of mystic. I'm pragmatic. I taught maths and physics.
Okay.
So, and I have no imagination whatsoever. And I mean that sincerely. So they can only get to me through physical things. Most people, they can come back as an apparition, which I deal with. The apparition cases are absolutely amazing when people see them.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Erlendur Haraldsson in Iceland. In Iceland, a lot of young men die in fishing accidents, boating accidents, because that's their life up there. And quite often in Haraldsson's books, he describes where the apparition comes back not to someone in the family, but the apparition could appear, say, to Tony Bruschi and say, "Hello, my name is so-and-so and I lived in so-and-so. Would you tell my parents I'm all right?" And they give a message for the parents. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, that's the best type of evidence, where they come to a third party and give the information, and then you've got to pass it on to the parents.
Sure.
So apparitions, the feeling of being touched, your hair being stroked, the movement of objects in houses is also another way, very common, that the people who have passed over let you know they're there. And it's quite often an object that belonged to the person who's passed. There are lots of cases like that. I'm not talking... See, people bandy this word about poltergeist activity, mm-hmm. but poltergeist activity is not one thing. Mm-hmm. You can get poltergeist activity, which might be slightly negative, from an old-fashioned place, an old place, a castle, whatever,
sure.
where for some reason things keep getting moved, etc. But when, I'll use the word spirit for want of a better word, when a person comes back to you, a loved one belonging to you comes back, they want to let you know they're okay. And it's almost like a wave of the hand saying, "Hi, mm-hmm. I'm here, I'm okay, and I'm letting you know that I'm okay." And that's quite often done by the movement of objects. And it's usually something pertinent to them. And that is actually the most common thing of all.
Okay.
They can come back through. Nowadays, people are saying people are coming back through the computer. I've not seen a convincing case of that, but I'm prepared to be shown that I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the other point I have to make is nobody is an expert in this. We can only share the experiences we have.
Yep.
And they can come back by letting you smell their perfume, their tobacco smoke. That's very common as well. They can come back to let you know they're okay in many, many, many different ways. But the most common ones, I think, are the ones that I've described at the moment.
Sure.
That's when somebody comes back. Apparitions are a bit extreme, but they do happen. And they can happen to people who want to see them, and they can happen to people who do not want to see them. I've got a fantastic case, which is actually not funny for the man it happened to, but it's actually a funny story. I don't know if you'd like to hear that or not.
I would, and I want to talk in specifics about some of the categories of hauntings, if you will, whether it be poltergeists sure. or apparitions. But I want to ask one question before we get to that. How often do you think we overlook those sort of visits or dismiss them as something else when they're actually happening? I mean, obviously an apparition would be pretty obvious, you'd yeah. think, but other things as far as, moving of objects or things of that nature, where we just brush it off and it's nothing, it's nothing, it's nothing.
Yes, we do that all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that they get frustrated? That there's on the other side, that there's a frustration level with that, where someone who is, especially a skeptic, someone who may not be so open to the idea, constantly brushing it off as it's something else, it's the wind, it's what have you.
Well, I'm sure that happens all the time, and I'm absolutely sure that the people up there have been using a hammer on my head for many years, trying to get me to see the truth of what uh-huh. is actually happening. One of the things that happened to me fairly recently was Professor Roy died in 2012 mm-hmm. in December. And it was December the 26th, 2012, and it was a Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And I went along to a local spiritualist church on the Sunday, not necessarily thinking I would hear anything from Professor Roy. But in actual fact, and he'd only been dead since the Thursday, I got the most amazing message, ending in the medium saying, "He's going to try to make himself known to you within your own home. And when this happens, you will hear the sound." And she made a noise like if you take a spoon to a crystal glass, you know, a ting on a crystal glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I didn't really believe it, to be quite honest with you.
Uh-huh.
But the other pieces of evidence she gave were just absolutely amazing. They were just fantastic. And as you can imagine, by that time, I'm in tears by that time.
Sure.
It's only 2 days later, and between going, thank you.
Of course. So,
that was lovely. That was great, because it always worried Archie. He had dementia, and it always worried him. If you had dementia, when you got to the other side, would you know where you were?
Yeah.
And would he make it? And the words that were used were from the through the medium were exactly the words that he would have used. So that was very, very meaningful. And remember, I actually wasn't looking for anything that particular day. However, I digress. That was Sunday. On the Tuesday night, I go to bed about midnight usually. Mm-hmm. My husband was sleeping in bed and I trooped in as usual. And I just sort of got one leg into bed and was about to pull the cover up when I heard this ting from the hallway. And being a skeptic, I thought, nah, it's the router. You know how you, sure. Routers used to ping, right?
Yeah.
So my husband's kind of comme ci, comme ça with this. He does believe, but he pretends he doesn't, you know.
Uh-huh.
So in the morning, I just noted the ping and I thought, that's possibly interesting. So the next day, I casually said to my husband, did you hear that router pinging last night? And he said, that router doesn't ping. So to me, that was more evidential that Archie had done what he said he would done. And that, I thought that was very, very clever of him to do that. And each and every one of us have our own individual pieces of information.
Sure.
Obviously, we can be misled, as the skeptics quite rightly say. We can do a bit of wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have got an over-analytical mind.
Sure.
And I'm nobody's fool. And I don't suffer fools gladly, to be honest.
Sure.
And I'm not going to use specific names here, but I've been to lectures by at least three British well-known skeptics in which at question time I've taken them to task. And each of them did not really have an answer for me. They just get up there and spout this crap. Because they don't, I think they're afraid to believe it, and I don't know why this fear comes into it. Surely it's the most important thing any of us can ask ourselves. Mm-hmm. Is there anything after the physical?
Sure. Sometimes fear does crazy things to people, and it's just that constant search for validation of a belief rather than trying to understand or accept something that may be different. When we're talking about the different types of hauntings, and I want to talk about those in detail, and some questions about it. Before we get to that, though, I would love to hear that story that you had mentioned earlier about your friend and an apparition that occurred that wasn't so funny to him at the time, but indeed was quite interesting.
It certainly was not funny to him.
Yeah.
To this time, I have to tell you, first of all, this chap did not seek me out to tell me this story. I'm just having a drink of water.
Sure.
He lives in quite a big house with high roofs, and he had sent his wife and children away for a holiday so that he could decorate the house.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in this big house on his own, and he was painting the ceiling, which are very high ceilings. And this man, I have to tell you, was a shopkeeper. He had his own shop. And as he was painting, now the interesting thing about painting is, quite often, spirit can make themselves known to you if your mind is not focused on something. He was just mindlessly painting this high ceiling in a corner. Consciousness was slightly altered.
Sure.
When suddenly, this ceiling would be 20 feet high anyway. And suddenly, he looked along the top of the ceiling, and there was a man looking at him about 6 feet away from him. Now, this man was solid. As far as it went, he had a face, he was in colour, he had on a cap, a jacket, a shirt and tie, and his body finished at the waist. There was nothing below the waist. So he was looking across under the ceiling at this man, looking at him and pointing at him. And the man said to him, tell them not to do it. Tell them not to do it. Everything's going to be all right. Well, of course, my friend blinked, looked again, and the man was still there pointing at him and saying, tell them not to do it. Everything's going to be all right. Well, I can't actually use the language that my friend used at this. And the man, as he looked at the man just disappeared. Poof, gone. He was there, and then he wasn't after these two sentences. Now, my friend recognized him as a man who used to come into the shop.
Okay.
And the man had died 6 years ago, but he wasn't an old man. He was only about 56. Now, the problem here was this man's wife still came into the shop. It was a general store, it's a type of shop.
Mm-hmm.
So he's remembering, tell them not to do it. Everything's going to be all right. Now, as my friend said to me, Tricia, I don't know how I got down that ladder. He got down that ladder and he was shaking so much that he could only sit in a chair for the rest of the night. He was so shattered by this whole experience. He couldn't even make himself a cup of tea. So anyway, eventually, obviously that night passed. He didn't go up the ladder again. And the next day in the shop, he was terrified the wife was going to come in. But she didn't, thankfully. But she came in the next day. Now, it's not a very nice part of Glasgow that he has his shop. It's one of the, I don't know what your equivalent would be, it's one of the lesser posh areas in the whole place.
Okay.
Anyway, so, and he didn't know how the wife would take this at all. So he said to her, can I have a word with you in the back shop? And she said, yeah, sure. So she sat down in a case of lemonade crate or something, and he told her exactly what happened. So she stood up, went towards him, threw her arms about him and gave him a kiss on the cheek and said, thank you. And then she disappeared. And he thought, okay, what's happening here, you know?
Yeah.
So I think he told her in self-defense in case the man came back again, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So anyway, a couple of weeks passed and the woman came in. She'd been in other days, but this particular time, 2 weeks later, she came in and she said, can I speak to you in the back shop? And he said, yeah, sure. So she said, I want to tell you what that was about. She said, my son has always been a troublemaker. He was in trouble with the police as a juvenile. But now, her words, the police have fitted him up for something he didn't do. And if he's found guilty, he will go to jail, the proper jail. So we all decided we were going to take him to Southern Ireland and hide him from the police. And he would just have to live in Southern Ireland for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then my husband said to you, tell them not to do it. Everything's going to be all right. So they took the word of the husband saying, tell them not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to court with the boy. And when the judge or the magistrate looked at it, he said, no case to answer. And he dismissed the case. Now, I don't know if I would take the word of a half materialized apparition, but they did. And she said, it's not the first time my husband's been back. He has been seen at the garden gate by many people. So this is a man dead 6 years, still taking an interest and knowing what's going on in the life of his family. And my friend didn't really appreciate it. Now, I have to point out here that this person has got no interest in psychical research. He's never had an experience before, and he's never had an experience afterwards, for which he's very grateful.
Yeah. I was going to say, probably doesn't want to have another experience.
He doesn't. As he said, he really nearly had an accident in his underwear, you know, in that particular day. That's being polite.
What's so interesting to me about that is not only does the husband who is deceased still have an interest in his family, which would be expected if you're on the other side and you're still there, but it's almost as if he could tell the future. Or was it just an assumption? Would he have also had that belief had he been alive?
No, you see, this is what we don't know. This is what we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know if they have a capability to see that little bit further or not. We just don't know. I don't like the idea of predestination.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the idea that your future is there in front of you. What's the point?
Yeah.
You know, you have to choose your sliding doors. Which one am I going to go through? And I do believe there are certain points that we have to go through, but how you get from the beginning to the end, hopefully we have free will. Otherwise, we don't grow. We don't learn anything.
Hopefully.
So you're quite right. He must have had some, maybe, you see, there's a lot of people believe that time is a block. It's one big giant block of time.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you can access that or not, some people seem to be able to do after the dead. Of course, you've got people like Chris Robinson and people who do appear to be able to see into the future. For example, 9/11, a lot of people had premonitions
mm-hmm.
about 9/11, the Titanic,
sure.
the Aberfan disaster in Wales, all of these sort of things. That some people seem to just get that wee peek into the future. Now, along with that, there are more and more quantum physicists becoming interested in these matters because they realize that time is not what we think it is. Matter is not what we think it is. We're all bound up in this quantum intangible world where there are many things going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to make more sense to them that this reality is more of a possibility now than it ever was.
Sure. I there's so much evidence of it. I mean, it just obviously judging by the interest that we both see from the public on this topic, there's so many people who've experienced something and they want answers to it. When it comes to apparitions, this is an interesting thought that we get quite often on the show as far as some of the stories that we go. Obviously, an apparition, a lot of times you think of the somewhat transparent person standing there, or they're missing, their legs aren't there. There's something that is clearly defining them as an apparition. However, we have a lot of stories that we get where it turns out, well, that was an apparition, but they were as clear as day. They looked physical. They looked solid. There was nothing about them that was translucent. How often do you think apparitions or do you have evidence of apparitions being out there in the public that we don't even realize are, in fact, apparitions because they look just like you and me?
I think that's absolutely correct. One of my other accounts that I investigated was a story of an airline. Well, he was an airline pilot, but he was also a test pilot.
Uh-huh.
And where he met in Glasgow Airport, this other young pilot, he was only 36 years of age. He hadn't seen him for a couple of years. And when he met him, he actually said, Christ, he's lost a lot of weight. He noticed that himself.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a conversation. They had a suitable conversation between the two of them. And the other chap said, I need to go and get the plane now, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was only the next day he saw in the newspaper that chap had died 3 days earlier in Edinburgh. Now, this person, my Captain Bob, was an atheist. He didn't believe in this God stuff at all. He thought it was a lot of rubbish, and that absolutely shattered him. So what we did, I went with him to Glasgow Airport to see if we could find a videotape. But that was pre all of this nonsense of terrorism, etc. Uh-huh. And the videotape, by the time we got there, had been wiped. They changed the tape every week,
uh-huh,
which was unfortunate. But the interesting thing was the chief of security at Glasgow Airport took us seriously. And he got me to look up the timetable for the plane that the other chap was allegedly catching.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a plane to his little hometown in the islands of Scotland. There are not many planes go there. And we found out later that he had died in Edinburgh. And that particular day, we know for a fact from the baggage handlers, a coffin of a pilot came through Glasgow Airport at that time, on that day, to go on a small plane to his hometown in the islands of Scotland. Now, my Captain Bob was absolutely shattered by this, more so when he knew the family, and he phoned the father, and he said to the father, you know, I was there, how sorry he was, and what had happened, you know, to his son. And he said that over the past 6 months, his son had lost 4 stone in weight. Now, that tied in with my Bob saying, Christ, he's lost a hell of a lot of weight. Now we got the verification of the weight loss after we knew that he had died. So all of these things, but he thought he was solid. He was talking to the right person. Now, we did it on television. There was a documentary about that we were on.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of people that came up to Bob and myself individually later saying the same thing had happened to them was amazing. That more and more people speak to people and they find out later that they actually were dead by the time they spoke to them, which is fascinating.
Does the dead realize that they are dead in that case, do you believe?
I don't know. The answer is to that,
yeah.
I don't know. There are cases, but you mentioned apparitions. There was a classification of apparitions done by Tyrrell at one time. They talk about the crisis apparition, where somebody is maybe in a war-torn country and they're dying and that apparition appears to the people in the house. You do get apparitions that you can see through.
Mm-hmm.
You get flimsy apparitions. You get partly formed apparitions like the man painting the ceiling.
Sure.
I forget where I was going with that, but do they know they're dead? I don't know. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. One of Albert Best's best cases, I think it's in my first book, actually, he was called to a house in Glasgow where a young, and it was a fairly new house where a young couple kept seeing a figure of an old lady, and they kept seeing the flowers were getting moved every time in a vase. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't understand it. So Albert went along, and as soon as Albert walked in, he could see psychically, he could see the old lady standing beside the fireplace. But the couple couldn't see that. So Albert said to them, "See the fireplace?" He said, "Where did you get the stone for the fireplace? The man had built it himself." And the man said, "Oh, I've got a trailer. And every time I was coming into Glasgow, I would see this ruined house and I would take some stone from it, bring it here. And over time, I built the fireplace with the stone from this old house." So he said to Albert, said to the woman psychically, where do you think you are? Where do you live?" And the woman gave the address of near enough to where the man had got the stones from the old house. Now, Archie always said, we call that one built in with the bricks. Did the woman come with the bricks? As Archie used to say, what happened if he built a swimming pool? Who knows?
Yeah.
But that's very, very strange. Anyway, Albert explained to the lady, he said, "Where do you think you are?" And she said the address. And she said, "I'm waiting to go to hospital for an operation." And Albert said, "Well, I've got bad news for you. You didn't make the operation. You're dead." And he talked her through. And the lady, she apologized for interrupting. She apologized for moving the flowers. And she moved on because it had to be explained to her that she actually didn't live there anymore. So sometimes they don't know they're dead.
And they need that little push, that little explanation. Move on. Do you think there is an expiration date, essentially, for a spirit or a ghost if they don't get that little push like you got in that example there? Is there some point where they come to the realization of what's going on or just their time to move on and they can no longer choose to follow a family member or be wherever they may be?
Once again, the answer is I don't know to that. I don't know. The trouble is there's so much that we don't know.
Sure.
There are, you're talking about earthbound spirits earlier on, people who don't know they've actually died.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a case where it was 3 airmen. They were earthbound for 30 years before an intervention of a Church of England minister. But they, for 30 years, time doesn't seem to mean the same to them. They were actually earthbound and didn't know they were dead, and they had to be helped to cross over, which they did. And someone was there to receive them and to help them. My father died when I was about 12, and I didn't get into this, you know, until I was 30.
Sure.
And but one of the first communicators actually I did get in a private sitting, because you have to go to a private sitting if you want to find out about these things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some private sittings are comme ci, comme ça, nothing much in them, but some of them give you information that even you don't know and you've got to check up on. So I'm not saying for 1 minute that my father's been lingering about for 30 years waiting to communicate. I don't think they do. I think they've got other work to do.
Yeah.
But they pop in from time to time to see how you're getting on. The ones that are there constantly, I think at the beginning, are the ones that pass over and want to let you know they're okay. And then they go on and do their own job. I mean, you've probably read Conversations with God. You've probably read all the Silver Birch books. They've got work to do once they get over there, if they choose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They've got work to do. And it's like you going to visit a relative or phoning someone. You pop in from time to time. You phone them, "Hi, how are you getting on?"
Mm-hmm.
And you keep in touch that way. And I think the ones that want to keep in touch, they might not want to keep in touch. They might not like you, and that's fine.
And sometimes you don't find it out till after they're gone. Like, why are they not showing up anymore? They really didn't like you while you were alive either. They just pretended to.
It's possible.
Here's an interesting one. And this is a story we just had the other day on the show. And it was, excuse me, one of these experiences where I hadn't heard anything like it before, which is rare because we get thousands of stories.
Yeah, me too.
And this one, I mean, there's elements of it that are familiar to other things, but this specific case, not so much. And it leads me to the question of, can the living also be ghosts? And I'll give you the story. We had a listener who just had this feeling that she really wanted to go back to her home, her homestead, for where she grew up, and check on this tree that her father had carved her name into as a child. Then she had moved on years earlier. They lost the home after a divorce and such. But she just, for some reason, felt she wanted to go see this tree that she had seen when she was 8. And she is now in her 30s. So she goes over in her dream. She's dreaming about this tree, and she's dreaming that she's walking through the woods and looking at it at night. And in several nights, she walked through the woods. There was no one there. She's just seeing the tree. One of the nights that she was dreaming about this consecutively every night of the week, she goes and sees the tree, but she also sees a family having a campfire near the tree. And she recognizes the family as the family that purchased the home from them years earlier. She's just still writing this off as, it's a dream. I'm dreaming that this family is there because they now live there. Couple week or so later, she actually goes to the home and asks if she can go and take a picture of the tree. And they tell her, sure, actually, we're about to cut the tree down because it's dying. And we can cut this piece of the tree for you so you can keep it and have it as a keepsake. And then the woman's who owns the home, her children walk into the house. And the littlest one freaks out when he sees the lady because he thinks she's a ghost. This is the living lady. And he had seen her in the woods off in the distance by the tree when they were having a campfire the previous week. So there's an element here of astral projection, if you will. And I'm wondering, how often is this the case when someone, quote unquote, sees a ghost? Is it truly someone who's dead, or is it something like this occurring more often than we realize?
Well, both, actually. But the astral projection ones, they call that phantasms of the living when that happens. And it definitely is an astral projection. There's one funny one. I think it's in my second book, and it's quite funny. Excuse me, I've got a hoarse throat today. Too much talking.
As do I. I understand.
And that's sort of normal to me, what you've just told me. It definitely is. You see, the older I get, the more I realize all of these things we're talking about, every single thing has to do with intention. Mm-hmm. Intention and motivation, that's what's behind all of these paranormal things, is your intention, emotion, and motivation, these three things. And if you can do astral projection, which I never encourage people to do unless I've got somebody, you know, to help them go out of body, etc., astral projection. But yes, that can happen. And if I've got time, I'll tell you very quickly about this other one. Once again, this lady I didn't know contacted me. And the reason she contacted me wasn't actually, it didn't end up to be the reason that we started off at the beginning. I think she wanted to talk to me about reincarnation, and then it turned, and I always ask people, has anyone in your family had a psychic experience, so on, you know, what's the history, blah blah blah. And she said that at one time her son got married and went to, I think it was South Africa he went to, and she had been to his house in South Africa, and then him and his wife had a little boy. She saw the little boy as a baby. But now the child would have been about 2. So she decided in her wisdom to buy a book about astral projection, and she was going to project herself into the house to see the baby. That was her thinking behind it. So she did that, and first of all, she gave herself a terrible fright, because the first time she did it, she ended up in blackness. There was nothing but black around her. And then somewhere or other, she saw a man, and the man said to her, go back, go back. And she came back. So she got a fright, but undaunted, she did it again. Mm-hmm. And the next time she was in blackness, but as she put it, she could see this ball of light in the distance. And it was only years later, she saw the Earth from space. She realized that what she was looking at was the Earth from some other perspective. So undaunted, she did it again. And she pictured the son's house, obviously, in South Africa. She got herself inside the house, and it was the correct house. She looked around. There was nobody there. And she could see curtains. She could see different things. But there was not a person there. And she's zoomed back into her body again. So at that time, this was about maybe 15 years ago, mm-hmm. before computers were so easily available.
Sure.
So she wrote a letter to her son, and she asked him about his house. And he said, oh, we've moved. The house is empty now. We've just left some curtains and stuff. So he gave her his new address. So undaunted, she tried to zoom in on the new address. I'm cutting this short. And she managed to find herself in a house, a different house, and she could describe curtains, sofas, all that sort of thing, zoom back. And then she asked her son, what were his furnishings like? And it turned out that she was seeing the furnishings.
Wow.
But she still hadn't seen the grandson. So she knew where the girl's parents lived in South Africa. She'd been there before. So she thought she would go and see the grandparents. This is a funny one. So she did a astral projection, got into the house where the grandparents were. Now, the grandparents were devout Catholics, very much so devout Catholics. Now, she found herself near the ceiling in the living room, and she could look down and see the man reading a newspaper beside the fire. Now, the interesting thing was she could see him, and he looked up, and he could see her, and he lifted up the cross and said, go away, you devil, go away. And she just thought this was hilarious, and she laughed so much she found herself back in her own body again, in her own house. But the man did see her, and that was interesting. I told her not to do it again, right enough, but whether she did or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
It can happen. It is a form of astral projection. There's no doubt about it, whether intentional or unintentional.
Yeah. I wonder how often it is where that is occurring. And obviously, she probably has no control over whether someone sees her or not.
No.
It's just sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. And it kind of makes you think about with ghosts, too. I mean, and it's such a general term, but with a loved one that's coming back, how much control they have of projecting themselves so you can actually physically see their apparition or not.
We don't know that. We just don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, Silver Birch and all these people would have you believe it depends on your own soul growth when you get there. The Dalai Lama always says that if you're going on holiday to Australia or wherever, you find out about it before you go. And he said it's the same with the afterlife. Find out as much as you can before you go, and then it'll make your journey a lot easier.
Yeah.
And it seems to be on the soul growth of the person that dies. I mean, not everybody's going to the same place, the same level of afterlife. You wouldn't expect Mother Teresa and, say, Hitler to be in the same room, you know, as it were.
No.
And room, of course, is the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
Sure. It's funny with saying, you know as much as you can about your destination before you get there.
Absolutely.
With doing this, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel I have even more questions than I ever had before, the more that I learn about it. So I know more, but I know less at the same time.
When people used to pay good money to come to Glasgow University for 40 hours of lectures with Archie and I, they would always come in, obviously, with a curious mind.
Sure.
And that's before YouTube and all these things. We're talking about the 80s sometime.
Yeah.
And I would always say to them, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I said, obviously, we've all come here to discover what we can about the paranormal, about survival, etc. And you've all come here to have your questions answered. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, after 40 hours of lectures, you're going to have more questions than you had when you came in. And that's absolutely true. What you said is absolutely true. I will say I'm in the delightful position. I can tell you about my experiences. I can tell you about research. But deep down, we really know nothing.
Exactly.
We can only tell you the pragmatic things that happen round about us.
Exactly. Just recounting the experiences that we learn and let everyone draw their conclusions from that. Tricia, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm very pleased to be on the show, Tony. Lovely to talk to you.
And you too. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you liked the show, if you want to keep this thing going, well, please become an EPP, extra podcast person. Get all the bonus episodes of our show, exclusive interviews, exclusive video content. Lots of great extras there for our EPPs, and that is what funds this thing and keeps it on the air. Without our EPPs, the show could not go on. So, if you like it, consider supporting it. We greatly appreciate you if you already are. Check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.